Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
On 102.3 FM Riverside
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. Joe Goldberg. Must be a thriller day.
I'm in the house.
You're in the house. The house is burning.
The house is burning. Yeah,
pretty close.
Sad.
Yeah, pretty shocking. But you know, I grind it at night. I'm grinding so hard that my lower jaw, I can't eat now. It's so sore.
Stress?
I guess so. I guess I was stressed knowing that I was going to be talking to you.
Yes, that's right. I just eat when I have to talk to you. I go the other way. My jaw works over time.
Well, you're a skinny guy, so you can eat.
Sorry, it's a bad connection, I guess.
Yeah, you're a bone rack. And you're going to BoucherCon, I guess, soon?
I'm going to Boucher next week. I'm speaking with the people who've been on the show. The Steves,
yeah,
Gervais, and Stratton, and a few others doing a panel on CIA and military and covert action sequences and writing. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be good. It'll be a good crowd. It's always a good event, so...
Right, San Diego's not bad.
Yeah, San Diego's a nice place. You know, beautiful place to be for a city. Okay, and joining, of course, is Mr. Gavin Stone all the way from the UK, where, of course, they're not getting the fires. They're probably getting rain.
Yeah, the UK's usually raining, and luckily I'm not in the house, so I don't have to say anything about the bodies in the basement, so we're all good.
Well, it's all right. We need them, right? I mean, when you get isolated and the fires are going on, you've got to have something to eat.
Well, there is that, I suppose, yeah.
Roast it. Now, today, we are talking to a writer, a thriller writer, right up the alley of both of you gentlemen, and kind of in the same league. And so here we go, Mr. Stuart Field. So let's first welcome you to the show.
Thanks for having me, and good morning or good evening, gents.
It's all a blur.
Yes. Time zones, nasty, dirty things.
Yeah, I don't think about it anymore. It's just one time zone, awake or asleep.
I'm write that one down. I'm going to steal that one.
Yeah, you do that. Well, so Mr. Stuart Field, so you've been around a lot. You've done a lot of books. And I noticed your John Steele collection, of course, and that's pretty, it looks like it's pretty popular. You have quite a few books in that. How did you get involved in writing? Like, what brought you over to the dark side?
I think I've always been a writer. When I was at school, when we used to get the projects, the teacher used to say, here's a word, write a two-page story. And I used to fill the whole book up and used to get told off for it because I used to write novels back then. But then, obviously, I joined the... Life got in the way, joined the army, and that got put to the side when I got the new job doing security for the British Army. Just happened by accident. I was one boring Sunday, I just started scribbling in a notebook, and next thing you know, John Steele was born.
Did you say wife got in the way or life?
No, life.
Life. Yes. Enunciate.
I'm just kidding. I'm just...
So John Steele is one of your big collections. How did you come up with John Steele? Who is John Steele?
John Steele is an MI8 agent. Basically, MI8 is the Secret Service of the Secret Service. What I wanted to create was a mysterious character that could live in the shadows and get instigated into different things like the police forces and different places, because like James Bond, he's got to be the worst secret agent in the world because everybody knows him. And so what I wanted to create was, some people think he's slightly unbelievable character because he can slip into the shadows, but that's kind of who he is. He's an investigator, he's a British agent, and he's on the hunt for an organization called Santini, who was responsible for the death of his family. Now, Santini is also, I think I've almost mirrored it on the whole spectre, an organization that deals with, is in the shadows, and it deals with crime, murder, espionage, all those nice little things that us crime writers like to pick the bones at.
Stuart, when you started writing, did you start with the character as the point, say, I need to put a story around him, or did you have a story idea that you need to build a character into? What was your thought process when you built out your books?
Whenever I'm writing, I don't plot. I'm not one of these that can sit down and fill out post-it notes and they've got everything. I just let the story go. I have no idea who the characters are going to be. Half the time, I have no idea what the plot is going to be, and I never know who's done it up until the end. I just start writing, and I just let the story take control, really. And I just find, if I'm surprised, the reader's going to be surprised.
How much of your own experience have you brought into this?
Absolutely not. Unfortunately, my army career, I was artillery, so I was in the rear. I was more in the rear than the rear. And so a lot of it is basically going back to, I was a fan of the original Bond films and Mission Impossibles and all those brilliant spy movies that we had in the 70s and the 80s. So a lot of it is a mixed match of that, brought in from army career, possibly none apart from weapons and tactics and stuff like that.
Beat me to that one, Alan. That's the question I was going to ask, because Stuart's actually from the same part of the world as me. We're both from Wolverhampton originally. What part of Wolverhampton was it you were living in, Stuart?
Finchfield.
Oh, not a million miles away from me. I was in Technical Wood. Yeah. So I was going to ask the same question as Alan about the tactics from the army, what you brought in. So where do you go to get your research and your answers for the kind of any of the continuity or the countries that your characters visits or the missions that he does? Where do you get that information from usually?
Well, with the countries that the character visits, that's the hard part of the job, because I found you have to go to these places like New York. You have to go. It's all right looking at Google Earth and all the rest of it, but you don't get the sense of the country. You don't get the smells. You don't get the atmosphere. I've been to New York 6 times. I think it's utterly brilliant. Been to Malta twice, and that's why I actually wrote the Malta story, because when we were there, we drove past the embassy, and it's a massive establishment, and it makes you think, why? Why is it so big and out of the way? And it makes you think, okay, well, there's a story here. But I think for any writer, you can look at Google Earth and all the rest, but you have to experience the actual place. You've got to, because, and especially a city, New York or San Francisco or whatever, because if you're writing about something, the chances are that someone who's reading it will live there. So you can't say the man walked down East 40th Street in New York and the brownstones. Well, guess what? There isn't. That's the meat and potato of our thing. As well as having a fantastic imagination, you have to get some sort of facts right, or else people will just tear it to pieces. Some things you can get away with. I don't know whether you gents are the same. You do have an allowance, shall we say. Namely, you can put a diner where there possibly could be a diner. Or
jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A gift shop or something. So the reader goes, okay, well, I can see that. But you can't put something where, you know, you can't put a bookshop where there's a multi-story car park or something like that, because the reader will pick up on it.
So I get from that question, Stuart stole my question. I'm sorry, Gavin stole my question. So and you mentioned this, and it's a question I ask a lot of authors, is do you think about your readers a lot as you're writing, especially since you're kind of constructing as you're going along?
Yes and no. I've actually learned, and this is from other writers, that sometimes you've got to be mean, because you've got a lot of people that go, oh, the character's going to do. It's like the first couple of books. John Steele was working with a New York detective. Now, the reason I cut that short was he had to move on, because if it carried on from a certain point, that would be the dynamic from then on, and it wouldn't be the stories that I wanted to tell. And you've got a lot of people, oh, well, yeah, we want to read more of those. Now, if you bend to the will of all of the readers, you lose the story that they fell in love with. So you need to be a little bit selfish on that. You need to stick with the dynamic that you've actually created. But on other things, yeah, you do. If somebody goes, oh, can John Steele do this, or can Ronan Nash do that, then you go, okay, well, there's a possibility of that. So a bit of give and take, really. And I don't know how you guys feel about that, whether you feel the same, you know, whether you want to stick with the dynamic that you've created rather than bending to the readers.
Yeah, I don't care about my readers.
Yeah, but no one cares about you either.
Well, this is true. So it's kind of a give and take.
He asked a good question. And, you know, do we think about the reader? Do you think about the environment that we're writing in as we're constructing it? How about you, Gavin?
My environment changes all the time. I think writing the first book, it's been done across three different countries. I'm probably not the best authority to answer that one.
Yeah, and I only think about the reader myself as in response to earlier books.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like when people comment a certain way about a certain writing, then I'll think about it and then decide whether or not I should make that change, I guess. I guess that's the best way to say it, which I quite often don't.
Well, that's a question for Stuart then. Stuart, as you're creating your world with Steele and Ronan, do you have an idea of a sort of reason to write that? Is there a theme? Is there an issue? Or is it purely entertainment?
It's mostly pure entertainment. But unfortunately, I try and stay away from looking at news and all the rest of it, because it's, even though it's all current events, shall we say, a lot of it is doctored to what they want us to know about. And so you go, okay, well, take it for instance, the Gulf War. There's a lot of Gulf War. We got soaked with it, and then suddenly there was nothing because the next topic came along. So I think what you've got to do is you need to find A, you need to find something that the reader is going to be interested in. If you put in a small topic that people can relate to, then that's good. But it's like Gavin says, everything's changing that quickly. You can't stick with a topic, because by the time you've finished writing the book, that story's gone.
Right. So you have to be very careful about events, especially if they haven't been resolved when you bring them into your story.
Yeah. I mean, you take the current events at the moment. Ukraine, Russia, who do you pick as a bad guy anymore? Because the Bond books, when Fleming was originally writing, the Russians were the bad guys. It wasn't Spectre. He chose Spectre came along later. And I think that this is the thing, because there are so many. We live now in a world where you've got to be careful what you say, who you mark as a bad guy. And I think that's why I've created this organization, because I can do whatever I want. It's not going to affect anybody. It's not going to upset somebody, because, again, in this climate, who do you pick as a bad guy without thinking, is this going to like bite me in the bum at some point?
Yeah, I fully agree with that, because this week's bad guys is like kind of tomorrow's hero and vice versa. And I don't know about you guys, but I've found that with the whole COVID incident that's just happened, there's a very mixed reaction to that. And I'm wondering, as authors, you know, should this kind of thing be mentioned in the book, or is everybody going to be that glad that, you know, that we're not stuck in a lockdown, that it shouldn't be mentioned in any story or fiction work ever again?
I ignored it.
Me too.
There's no reason for it to be, not necessarily because of pandemic fatigue. We went through it. It's a reality. It's the way the world was, and it changed the way people react. But it wasn't really that important in the context of the world that I created for my thrillers.
Mm-hmm.
So it just would have been, oh, look at me, I mentioned COVID, and move on. Mm-hmm. It didn't make a difference to the storyline or the characters. And I just ignored it. Yeah. How about you, Stuart? Did you ignore it? Are you ignoring it?
I have. I didn't even mention them because what I try and do with my books is I don't put a timescale. I don't say January the 10th, 1942, or this or the other. So my books could be set any time. And I think with that, I was thinking about some type of longevity for the stories, because if the stories can relate to, whether it's in the 80s, the 90s, or whatever, there are snippets of things in there, like weapons and all the rest of it, which Gavin will hopefully acknowledge to as well, because weapons and things like that are brought out at certain times. You can't say, I don't know, the guy had a Glock 17, but you've set the story in 1970, because...
yeah. The gun guys, weapons people will come and get you in a second.
They are, and they do, yeah. Oh, you can't say that because this is a 9mm, blah, blah, blah. And on one side, thanks very much. But yeah, on the other thing is, it's a story. Do you guys, I haven't had it for a while. I think the biggest one was Maltese Steel. And you get a lot of people, and they're more worried about what you put into it than the story. Namely, oh, well, that wasn't right. Especially on Amazon and all the rest of it. Oh, I've only given one star because of this bird that he talked about, or this, that, the other. And you go, it's a story. How is the story?
Yeah, that comes up.
Yeah, I've seen similar things. I even know of an author that got a one-star review the once because he was an Amazon Prime customer, and it was delivered after 3 days instead of the next day.
Well, that's your fault.
Yeah, it is. Got to blame somebody. It's a conspiracy.
Conspiracy.
Yeah. You get in there.
But it is true. And there's, well, that goes back to the question, do you think about your readers? Oh, how accurate do I really need to be? I sort of have a rule that says, I don't need to explain how the communication system works. It just has to work.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I'm going to move on. For those who want to write stories that have all that detail in, knock yourself out. I'm not an expert on them. I don't want to spend a lot of time figuring out, you know, frequency hopping and the like. I'm just going to say, he pushed the comm button and his earbud and he talked. Now, I don't like jumping the shark where they're talking, you know, 30 feet down in a bunker and they're on the cell phone. I'm like, okay, come on. That's ridiculous. But I don't need to, and if they did, I'd explain that. That's why I would say, no, that's just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But usually just...
So you write your story and you've done this up there, then you start with your editing and you go, I've put too much information. Yeah, this is like, there's too much information and it's just soaking up and even I'm getting bored. Or do you go, no, that's the right amount. How do you know when is enough information?
I call that stuff purple haze. The stuff that my eyes start glassing over, even though I may have written it. A paragraph, if it's really important, like in my first Spy Devils book, it was really important to explain how this suitcase thing worked, because that was going to be a plot point further on down. So I spent a full paragraph explaining how it's put together. But if it's just something, not just something, if it's a flavor, if it's something to appeal to that type of reader, I'll put a couple of sentences, I'll put a little bit in, but I'm not going to spend enough where I feel like the story has dragged and stopped, or the characters aren't growing, or the conflict is lost, and now we're in the purple haze of this stuff. And that's just, you know, that's experience in writing, I guess, or you know, you say this is, or being a reader, this is just too much. But I like to have just enough to get to the next point, unless it's really important for the plot, and I'll put a little bit extra in there.
Got you. I cheated. So I've had some flack over this. If anybody's read my book, you'll see I've got these little sections written in italics, and it'll say at the beginning tradecraft. And it'll explain exactly why something's done a particular way, not done another way, and how it works. And then it'll go back to the story. So you can kind of, if you're that engrossed in the story and you know how something works, if you're a seasoned operative like Joe, you know, you can just kind of, it as a field manual, and you can kind of read the intricate bits. You know, so I was a bit naughty there, and I cheated.
That's a primer. Yeah, I think it's a good way. Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
People,
yeah. Enjoy your season.
Yeah,
as well seasoned. Yeah. Well, how about nonfiction, Al? I mean,
well, nonfiction. Yeah, you see, that's got to be careful. I think that if it's important to the actions of the story, the crime, I've got to include it. Right. That's a really tough one, you know, especially historical, because you have to explain the atmosphere, the location, the city, why people are acting or reacting to certain things like the crime and in the way that they are. And so if you don't set up the city and give the history, then a lot of people won't understand it. So it's kind of important, but it's tough. You have to draw the line somewhere. Otherwise it does become too much of a history class and not enough of a story. So that's the hardest thing about writing nonfiction. So for me, anyway.
Yeah, what has been your main challenge, Stuart, when you first got into writing fiction? What was the bit for you that was the most challenging part?
When I first started, like I say, it was just a hobby. It was just something to pass the time. What I didn't want was the X factor. You know, people look at your book and go, oh, yeah, that's really good. And then behind your back, they go, that's absolutely garbage. And I think it's the whole self-confidence thing. When you're starting out, until you've actually published that first book, it's having the self-confidence and believing in that book that you've got, going, yeah, that's good to go. And especially for crime writers, it's very hard because the market has exploded. And, you know, it's not like before where you used to get the agent, the publisher, and you used to get the big check and this, that, that. Anyone can be a writer. And I think the problem is, again, you need to get hold of the story, see it through, get it out, and then just let it fly. And then whatever happens, happens.
Hey, Stuart, can I caveat your comment there? That anyone can be a writer. Can I say anybody can publish a book?
Yeah.
Okay. Not everybody can be a writer, or if they have to work at it or whatever, but right now, anybody can publish a book.
I mean,
I think there's a difference.
I mean, there are some people might actually say, well, your stories are garbage, which is great because, you know, everyone's got individual taste, but it's the fact, can you tell a story? Are you able to put a load of words together that make some sort of sense, that grip a person, that holds them until the very last page, and then for them to go, I want more. I want that next book. And I think that is the hardest part that we've got, because you start reading your own works, especially when you're editing and all the rest of it, and you go, really? How much can I actually cut? And I hate editing, because you know that you've got to cut something out. But it's believing in your work, and like you say, Joe, don't give a damn about the reader, because this is my book. I believe in it. This is the way it is. If you don't like it, that's fine, because somebody will.
Yeah, the book is an extension of who you are, so you're putting yourself out there, and that takes a lot of courage in some sense.
And like any other art. Not everybody's artwork. If you go to an art museum, and it's not to everybody's taste. You know, not everybody liked Picasso when he first started painting.
Oh, so you're Picasso now.
He's a Picasso.
But I think that goes back to the thing about, do you listen to your readers? You can't. You have to do your story and go, no, this is how I want it, regardless. Because 20% might go, oh, I don't like the way that went. But all the rest, you know, whose will do you bend to? No, yours. It's your story. That's the way you like it. The end.
Well, that's why I say to my fans, I actually put a little piece of paper in any book that I send directly is reviews are welcome. Constructive comments are welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Feedback, the negative stuff, it just says, hey, did this wrong. That doesn't help me become better. But something constructive criticism, let it rip.
So I know what to do now if I want to get better. Just go and read all your reviews and then work up on there.
All two of them. Stuart's got so many more reviews. You guys swamp me.
Oh, don't read my reviews. Oh,
you talk to my wife and my kids. That's about it.
Yeah, that's the hardest part, I think, isn't it? Harder than writing the book, you're getting the reviews.
When I first started writing, I'd say it was just a project. A friend of mine read it, thought, yeah, that's a good book. You should get it published. But what I did was I got about 10 the USB data sticks, and I copied the book, and I gave it to the wives of the soldiers and said, yes, you kind of know me because I'm working on the game, but you don't know me enough to be objective. Read it and let me know if you didn't like it. Just be honest and tell me what you didn't like about it. Now, 10 people are going to come out with 10 different likes or hates, but what you're looking for is the one constant, and that is where you've got to go, okay, well, they all liked that or they all hated that. And that is, for me, it's the same with Amazon reviews. You look at the one constant and not the, I didn't like it. That's it. Yeah. I did actually have one review that said, didn't like it. Didn't give a reason why or anything, just didn't like it. Well, yeah, great. But that doesn't help me whatsoever.
Hunt them down. Take them out. Come on.
Stuart has friends.
Yeah. Start using your connections. So your location, how detailed? Because you said it, you love New York and traveling and stuff. So how detailed do you make your location in your book? How important is that to you?
I think very, because what you try and do is draw the person into that story. Now, I've had a lot of people, and the crime fest in Bristol, you meet a lot of people there and they say, oh, we really liked your book and, yeah. And I liked the way you described that park or this, that, or the other. And it helps bring the person into that story. And especially if you've got an incident where you want the person to feel terrified or have fear for your character, because you're basically asking the reader to fill in the blanks. You're asking them, because you want to give them enough information that they can fill in the blanks. My first book, like I say, I gave out several data sticks, and this one woman came, she went, I couldn't finish the book. The murders were that horrific. And I said, what murders? You don't see any murders. You see the person getting snatched, and then the next thing you know, the police are finding the body. You don't see any murders. And she went, oh, yeah, she filled in the blanks. So whatever she came up with, and, seek help here, and that's what we do. We create a world and ask the reader to fill in that blanks.
Yeah, I love that. Are there any authors that you, actively follow, that you draw inspiration from or that have helped inspire you with your writing?
I don't read. I can't sit still long enough. I do a lot of Audible books, especially when because I do roaming patrols in a vehicle, and I listen to a lot of Audible, and I've done a lot of the Jack Reachers. At the minute, I'm just starting with Paul Gritton, Gitchum, Paul Gitchum, his books, because it's very diverse. But anyone who's influenced, I really can't say that I'm influenced by anybody. I know that's very arrogant to say that.
You're supposed to mention the hosts. It's the polite thing to do. Say, well, yeah, Joe, Gavin.
I mean, absolutely.
I think we're all on Audible, aren't we?
Yeah.
Hey, Stuart, how do you deal with your bad guys? How do you interact with them?
I have, in the one John Steele book, I've got this one bad guy, Mr. Williams. He's a constant bad guy. He is basically the Moriarty. He is the Magneto. He's the yin and yang to Steele. And I love that character, because even though they're good and bad, they're almost alike. So you've got those. But as for the other bad guys, yeah, burn them. You just want them to get a horrible death or get their comeuppance that they actually deserve. Yeah, you make them as nasty as possible, and then you just finish them off as nicely as possible.
If only it was that way in real life. And how do you write violence on the page? Are you conscious of it?
I think with violence, you need to be careful. You really need to be careful, especially nowadays in today's climate. Now, if it's a gunfight or something like that, it's what basically people are reading about. Yeah, they want to. People read the Bond books or the Bourne books or whatever for, because that's what they know. That's what they're reading it for. But I think other violence, we need to be very, very careful. It's like the death of a victim. And I try not to show how a person gets murdered because, again, people might get upset. How could you do this to the woman or the child or whatever? But apparently, and this is one fact that came up on the Crime Fest, if you hurt an animal, yeah, that's the worst thing you could ever. You can slaughter millions, but you kill a dog, yeah, you're in trouble.
Yeah, John Wick's living proof of that.
Well, it's true. You kill an animal and it's hard. You know, when you kill people, Gavin there, he's upset. He puts the book down.
You're right. Soft.
Soft. Yeah. He's light, you know, but yeah, don't kill an animal. So what do you get out of the writing of books, Stuart? At the end of the day, when you finish a book, do you think you gain something from it? Do you change as a writer or as a person?
I get an idea for a story. It might be a slight idea, and then I need to get it out. And then once it's out, I wouldn't say it's almost like a drug, but it's something that gnaws at me. I need to get that story out. Once that idea has got into my head, I need to get it out into the world because I just love writing. Call it a vocation, because you get some people and they just write because they want to write, and then you get others and they just love to write. The same as musicians or snooker players or golfers or whatever. It's something that we feel that we love to do and we want to share it with the world.
Have you got anyone there translating it to German for you?
I've actually spoken to my publisher, and I'm with Next Chapter. It's a fairly new publisher, and they've got it in Spanish. They've got all my books in Spanish for some reason, and I've said, you need to look at Germany, because there is a massive, that the Germans love crime thrillers. They're absolutely mad for it.
I was just going to ask what the main differences are between John Steele and Ronan Nash. Are they complete polar opposites, or is Ronan Nash a Mark II of John Steele?
John Steele is, like I say, is MI8, if you like, secret agent, and he is the action character. He's the bloke who's going to jump off buildings or like jump into helicopters, guns blazing, all the rest of it. Ronan Nash is complete opposite. He's an investigator. He's the guy who sits down and tries to work out the puzzle. He's not into violence. Even though he's an ex-Army Ranger, he doesn't like getting into a situation where he's got to fight, because he's more of a thinker than an action person.
And where do the inspiration for your characters come from? You know, the other characters, secondary characters in the book, are they generally people you know and people in your life, or are they all your own creations?
No, they're just, like I say, I'll start writing and a character will pop up, and then I've got this massive stickets and notebooks all over the place, because when a character pops up, I need to start making notes. Right, this is Sam McCall, she's so hot, that's her height, this, that, the other, or else I'll just get lost. They just appear. I've just got a really mad imagination.
Or you drink a lot.
Given the choice. not as much as I used to. But.
Do you do social media? Do you have website? Do you like to interact with readers?
I like to get... I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, because you do like to hear from people. Every morning, I've just put out this morning or evening to all that's got Happy Monday or this, that, the other, because something that started out as a joke is now people expect it. It's quite mad because this one day I didn't do it and somebody went, are you all right? Yeah, is everything okay? Well, yeah.
People care about you.
You're like, yeah, just because I didn't do one day. And that's the thing. It is nice to know that people are looking out for you, even though they don't pop up every 5 minutes or this, that, the other. But yeah, I do like to interact because at the end of the day, they're the people I'm writing for. And that's why I like doing the Crime Fest. I'm actually off to Bloody Scotland in September and Iceland Noir in November because you get to meet the people that you're actually writing for. And it just gives you that nice sense that somebody is actually looking at your work.
You're not like Joe writing for the money.
Only for the cash, baby. In cash we trust.
Only the money.
Money? Well, you get paid for this? I'm doing something wrong.
I'm paying everybody else.
Yeah. No, Gavin has arranged it so all your deposits go into his account, you see.
Yes, yeah. He's sneaky.
He's secret service yeah. there. He's got things going on. Yeah. You think you've sold like 2 books and you've, he's getting all the cash.
That's it. I've been rumbled.
Yeah. Have you ever, Stuart, have you ever had a story that you've started to write and worked on for a while and then all of a sudden it just stalls or you can't finish it?
Yes, I've got 3 at the moment. I'm working on 3 books at the moment. And at the moment, because my work, because I do shift work, it tends to get in the way because you need time to sit and let your imagination run. And if you're coming off night shift and all the rest of it. So I'm working on John Steele's 7, which is technically the book, basically what happened to Steele after he got shot, the beginnings of Steele and Shadows, because I think people wanted to know, well, what actually happened to him in between that period and that period. Working on Ronin Nash 2, and I'm also working on a book that's going to have 3 short stories, which is short stories for Nash, Dale, and D.I. Platt, who was the detective in my last book, or double book, which was A Friend of the Family.
All right, how many people you know that you killed off in your books?
That I actually know.
Yeah, yeah. We want the truth. I want some names.
If you're made at the pub, next thing you know, like, I'm going to kill you, Max. Buddy.
I haven't got that mug yet. Yeah, if you mess with me, you'll end up.
Yeah. End up in the book. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks for having me, son.
Yeah, and we'll have everything up on our website so people can find you real easy. So, of course, our guest has been the action thriller writer, Stuart Field. So thank you for being here.
And a pleasure to know you all.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.